So, I would like to welcome you to today's lecture, to Introduction to Personnel Economics. And unfortunately, Professor Zhubanov could not be here today, and therefore I'm doing the lecture. I think I met all of you in the tutorials. And so far, we are talking about incentive payment, incentive compensation payment, and we discussed incentive schemes and the principal agent model, and so far we are always assuming risk neutrality. So both the agent and the principal will be risk neutral. So however, this assumption in real world is not very realistic, because most of us here are risk-averse persons. So meaning a risk-averse person is someone who prefers a safe outcome in favor of uncertain outcomes. So therefore, today we are introducing risk aversion and study incentive schemes for agent with non-neutral risk preferences. So, incentive payment is always based on measures of performance, which are almost somehow noisy. So, uncertainty plays a big role when measuring performance. So, this means that the effort of the agent and the whole performance that he's doing is not depending on his own effort. It depends also on factors that are outside his own control. So thinking about principal measuring agent's performance, and he could not observe the effort, he could only have some broad performance measure. So, noise will be something like exogenous factors. For example, we're having general market conditions, or weather, or luck. So we can think of a little example. So thinking about having two farmers here in Baden-Württemberg, we're having farmer A, who is producing apples, picking some apples, and we're also having a farmer B, who is also selling apples on the market. So farmer A is living in one city, and farmer B is living in another city. But they all sell their apples to a big market here in Baden-Württemberg. So imagine there will be markets in 2 days, and our farmer A, he has very good weather conditions. So thinking about someone working in sunshine, and he can pick a lot of apples that he can sell in 2 days on the market. And he's doing a lot of effort. Comparing, we are thinking about our farmer B, who's living in another city, which is also located in Baden-Württemberg, but in another region. This farmer B is not so lucky. He will have weather conditions that are not so good. So there will be a lot of wind, and it's very rainy. And then thinking about what is the performance of our farmer B, assuming that he will do exactly the same effort as farmer A, he will absolutely not have the same amount of apples that he can sell in the market in 2 days because of these bad weather conditions. So even if farmer B provides the same effort, the performance indicator, which are the number or the quantity of apples, will tell us that he will not have the same output. So we are defining this noise of performance as an exposure of agent A to some financial risk. So this is not a problem if our agent is risk neutral, because he only puts his decisions on the expected gain. However, as I told you at the beginning, most of us are risk-averse person. So now it is very fundamental idea and very important that we are having the right design of performance pay and having the effective performance schemes. So here on the next slide, you can see the basic notations that we are using for today. So we're having X, which is our random variable, or a so-called payoff. Then we're having U of X. This denotes the utility function. And the utility function is different for agents with different risk preferences. So we are distinguishing between three different risk preferences, and these are the so-called risk aversion, the risk neutrality, and someone who is very risk loving. The next is the E of X, which indicates the expected value of X. And the last is the variance of X, and the variance measures how the different values of X differ on average from the expected value of X. So the variance is our indicator for risk. So imagine there would be a lottery with two different payoffs. So thinking about someone is flipping a coin, and if that will be the number on the coin, then you will receive nothing, so receiving zero, and the other payoff will be 300. So it is, if it is the other side of the coin, you will receive 300 euros. So flipping a coin indicates probabilities of 50%. So the question now is, up to how much would you be willing to pay to buy this lottery? So the expected value, if you calculate the expected value, this will be 150. So if you would pay exactly 150 for buying this lottery, then you are a risk neutral person. Because your expected utility of X, which is this one, is equal to the utility of the expected value of X. So this is the definition of risk neutrality. So thinking about someone who is risk averse, if the price that you are willing to pay for this lottery is smaller than 150, you are a risk averse person. So for risk averse person, the expected utility of X is smaller than the utility of the expected X. So this is the definition, and what this means, I will show you in the following slides where we're having this on a graphic. And the third one is our risk-loving person, and for those guys, the expected utility of X is larger than the utility of the expected X. So meaning uncertainty gives risk-loving person a positive utility. So this one are willing to pay a premium for the expected value and on the thrill of lotteries. So thinking about the real world, this is not a behavior which is very often, but thinking about casinos in Las Vegas, we're still having some people on the planet who are risk-loving, who have some additional utility from having risk. So for today, this meaning, if we are thinking about agents who are risk averse, this means that for our agent, the increase in utility of receiving a little bit more is smaller than the decrease of utility if he would lose something. So the agent always weighs what he could additionally earn compared to what he can lose. And for him, the decrease in utility is what he weighted more. So therefore, the risk-averse person wants to trade some of the expected income for more certainty, because his utility is reduced by uncertainty. So the next slide shows us empirical results on risk preferences in the population. So we can see here that people differ a lot in their risk preferences. So this slide shows you results of a study by Domen, Falk, Hoffman, and Sunde, who are doing exactly this lottery experiment. So they are also flipping a coin, and if you are lucky, you will receive 300. And if you do not have luck, then you will receive zero. So seeing here for the results, most of the people would like to pay 100 for having this lottery. So therefore, the majority of people in this experiment, and this is also representative for the whole population, they are risk-averse people. However, you can also see that we have risk-neutral ones who would like to pay 150, and there are also risk-loving people in the study. But most of the people are risk-averse because they want to pay 100 or even less for playing this lottery. So the next definition, so there is certain certainty equivalent, which is called in German Sicherheitsäquivalent, is 100. So the certainty equivalent is the value for safe payment necessary to induce someone to give up playing the lottery. So risk-averse person values safe outcomes higher in favor of uncertain outcomes. So on the next slide, you can see everything graphically illustrated, and this is a risk-averse agent. Because you can see here the shape of your utility function, which is a concave one. So all risk-averse agents have concave utility functions. On the x-axis, you can see different values for x. So thinking about our lottery, where you can earn either a high output or high payoff, which is defined as XH, or you can have not very much luck and then you're having the low payoff, which is denoted by XT. So XT is the low payoff. So then our expected value of X is here. And then we're having a corresponding utility of our expected value of x. So here is the expected value of x, and on the y-axis you're seeing the corresponding utility of this expected value of x. So this is the one part of the formula for risk-averse person. Now we also need to think about the expected utility of x. And this you can see on the y-axis. So here on the top, we're having the utility of the high payoff, and there will be the utility of the low payoff. And the expected utility is denoted by U of X star. This is the same as the E of U of X from the formula before. So now if we are comparing these both values, then you can see that the utility of the expected value of X is larger for risk-averse person than the expected utility of X. The corresponding X star is this so-called certainty equivalent. So this is the fixed amount that an agent would agree to receive in exchange for this lottery. So our risk-averse agent would like to spend money for having safe outcomes. On this slide, you can see the definition for our certainty equivalent X star. So the certainty equivalent X star is equal to the expected value of X minus 1/2 times the coefficient R times the variance of X. So important here is this parameter R, which is the coefficient of absolute risk aversion. And this coefficient of absolute risk aversion is always positive if we're having a risk-averse person. It is negative for a risk-loving person because the risk-loving person would pay more for the expected value of X, and the coefficient is equal to zero if we're having a risk-neutral person. So remembering our example of the lottery, the expected value of our lottery was 150. The certainty equivalent X star was 100. So the agent would pay less than the expected value to buy the lottery because he prefers the safe outcomes and therefore his coefficient is larger than zero. The formula on top implies, so this relationship. And on the next slide, you can see how you could derive this coefficient of absolute risk aversion, and therefore you need to use the first order and the second order Taylor series approximation. So the next question is, should two partners share risk? And if the answer would be yes, what would be the optimal shares to sharing this risk? So should they have equal shares or should there be some difference? So now we can consider two partners A and B that could form an income partnership. So remember the example from the beginning, we have the farmer A, who's located in one village in Baden-Württemberg, and we have farmer B, located in another village, both farmers selling apples on the market, but they are both exposed to different weather conditions, so having different noises. And they can have a partnership. So they can put all the income together and share at the end the whole income to equal parts. So these are the notations. We're having farmer A, who has an independent income IA and our farmer B who has his income IB. So these incomes are independently from each other because both farmers work independently. And then we are having the certainty equivalent payoffs for both farmers. So we're having XA star for farmer A, which is equal to the expected income for farmer A, because farmer A has his specific noise, so the exogenous factors that influence his income, minus the constant 1/2 times his coefficient of absolute risk aversion times the variance on his income A. So the variance is the risk. And the coefficient of absolute risk aversion shows the degree which our farmer would like to have risk or not. And then we're having also a certainty equivalent payoff for our farmer B, which is defined as X star B, and is defined, which is equal to the expected income of our farmer B minus 1/2 times his coefficient of risk, absolute risk aversion, minus times the variance. So now suppose that they form the partnership and then they share the incomes, and we are also introducing some transfer, which is the lump sum income transfer. So you could also think about a transfer that farmer B pays additionally to farmer A. So then the income that farmer A will receive will be alpha income A. So the alpha is the share of the income that farmer A receives. So the part alpha of everything that he can earn for selling his apples on the market, plus the share beta of the income of his partner, the farmer B, plus this transfer wage, or you can also have it called as the transfer. And then partner B will receive the other shares of the income. So for partner B, he will receive 1 minus alpha of the income of farmer A, plus 1 minus beta, which is the share of his own income, minus this transfer. But the transfer could also be positive. So thinking about efficiency, what we are doing a lot of in the tutorial question, if you're remembering the problem sets, what will be efficient risk sharing? So efficiency is defined as always having no waste of money and having the total amount maximized. So efficient risk sharing would mean that we should maximize the sum of certainty equivalent incomes with respect to these both shares, alpha and beta. So we are maximizing the sum of certainty equivalent incomes. In the first row, the first part that you can see is the expected income of our farmer A, which is the expected, or the share of the expected income that he could only produce by himself, and the expected income of farmer B, and there the share beta, plus the wage. And the second part contains the cost of risk. So we're having again the constant 1/2 and the coefficient for absolute risk aversion, and the variance. And now the variance compared to the scenario where the farmer has only his own risk. Now they are forming this partnership and sharing the incomes. Now the variance also contains income of his partner. And then we need to sum the expected income of our other partner, farmer B, minus his cost of risk. Now we are maximizing. Maximizing always means taking first order conditions. So we're having the first derivative with respect to the parameters alpha and beta. And these are the optimal solutions for alpha and beta. So the optimal alpha, which is the share that farmer A has of his own income, is equal to the share that he will have from the income of his partner, the farmer B. And this is equal to RB divided by RA plus RB. Or you can write it differently, having it large A RA divided by large RB plus large RA, and here the large R is the risk tolerance. Because our both farmers here in the model having exactly the same degree of risk aversion, then the result for the share that our farmer B would receive, so the 1 minus alpha star and the 1 minus beta star, will be large RB divided by large RB plus RA, so it is exactly the same share. So both having 50% of the risk. So the main result is that risk sharing is always more efficient than having the risk alone. Because the expected utility in this partnership is bigger than the sum of individual expected utilities. So if both partners are risk averse, they should share the risk. Because together, our both farmers are better off than if they would have the risk on their own. But the other question is, what is if our two individuals, our two farmers, would differ in their degree of risk aversion? Should they also form a partnership? So if our farmer A, who's located in one region of Baden-Württemberg, will have a higher degree of risk aversion than farmer B, maybe farmer A is having a smaller village, and maybe he's having, from his culture, he's more risk averse. Normally, the degree of risk aversion depends on culture. So I think in Asia, people are more risk averse than thinking about someone who's living in the USA. So there will be cultural differences. So thinking about our two farmers, maybe they are having different large villages, and therefore we assume now that someone from a small village has a higher degree of risk aversion than someone living in a bigger city. So should they also share their incomes in the partnership? And the answer is yes, they should definitely form a partnership and sharing income, because together they are better off than alone. So because farmer A could be exposed to some risk, and this risk, so this bad weather condition, will maybe not have any effect on the income of our farmer B. But what changes is the share of the income that the farmers will receive. So, person A has a higher risk aversion than person number B. So then the result will be that our farmer A should have a smaller share of this whole income than the farmer B, and then this transfer wage is of interest because now our farmer B can compensate farmer A because he's having a smaller share on the total income. And there could be also special cases, what you can see here on the slide. Suppose now we're having an agent who is risk averse and we're having a principal, so the boss, and he is risk neutral, so his coefficient of total risk aversion is equal to zero. So should they also form a partnership? So before, in our example for the farmers, we're always thinking that both are somehow risk averse. Now in the new example where we're having a worker and a boss, we're assuming that only the worker is the risk averse one and the boss is risk neutral. So is it efficient? Should they also form a partnership? And to which parts or which shares should they implement for sharing this income? So the optimal share of income that person A, so the worker, would receive would be zero. So alpha star and beta star will be optimally set to zero because only the worker is afraid of risk, and therefore it is an optimal decision to put the whole risk on the risk-neutral person, because the risk-neutral person do not cares about any risk. For him, only the expected gain matters, and therefore the optimal is that B receives the whole risk, so B will receive the whole income, and he will pay a fixed salary to the risk-averse agent. So this is the important sentence. So efficient risk sharing requires that whoever finds risk cheaper, so has or is risk neutral or has a lower risk degree of risk aversion, should bear more of the risk. But now thinking about employment relationships, could this work in an employment relationship where the principal, the risk neutral one, is the boss and the worker is the risk averse one? So this would be perfectly fine if we could observe the output and the effort. So if the boss could observe the whole effort that the agent is doing, then he could set the optimal effort and everything is fine. However, normally we're having uncertainty, and then the principal could not observe the effort. Because in the principal-agent model, we're always having asymmetric information and conflict of interests. So then we are in a second best world. So asymmetric information means that the principal is less informed about the effort than the agent, and we're having the conflict of interest because the agent has costs of effort, therefore for the agent it is optimal to have a small effort, and for the principal it will be better to have a very high effort. So efficient, from the efficient point of risk sharing, it will be optimal that the principal will have the whole risk, so setting beta and alpha to zero, and the agent will have a fixed salary. But now, thinking about, has he now an incentive to work for the principal? Will the worker have an incentive to put on any effort? So if you have a fixed salary and the principal could not observe what he is doing, then he has no incentive to work at all. And in the following, we have a more close or more detailed view on optimal wage contracts in the case of uncertainty and if we have an agent who is risk averse. So now we derive the performance-related incentive payment and consider our risk-averse agent. So we're having asymmetric information and we're having the conflict of interest, having our risk-neutral principle and our risk-averse agent, and they negotiate on the employment contract. So the agent is working, providing an effort E, which is not observable. So our principal, the boss, cannot contract on the effort. And the principal can therefore also not set an optimal effort. The only thing that he could do is he can use some indicator for performance measure. So if the agent is doing an effort E, then the principal will receive a profit which we define as P of E. This is the profit before any wage costs. So the principal uses a performance measure that we denote as that. And this performance indicator contains effort E, but also a noise which is normally distributed and has zero mean. So for example, this performance indicator could be sales, physical output, or thinking about the example of our two farmers. So their performance indicator is the quantity of apples. Then we're having the wage. And the wage is equal to alpha, which is the fixed salary component, plus beta times that. So beta is the fraction of the output that the agent receives. And beta could also be defined as the strength of incentives. So having a higher B, having a higher power of incentives, because then the agent receives a larger fraction of this whole output. And here you can see the principal's net profit. So the net profit, P, is equal to the profit P minus all the cost. And in the principal agent model, we are only assuming that we're having wage costs. So the only costs that arise for the principal are the wage costs for the agent. So we need to subtract the fixed salary and the incentive payment. So our principal is a risk neutral one and he wants to maximize his net profit, which is affected by the effort of A, of his agent, and also by the definition of the parameters. So thinking about the timeline in this employment relationship, first the principal chooses the optimal wage contract by setting optimal fixed salary alpha star and setting optimal beta star, so the optimal incentive parameter. Then he forms this final wage contract and offer the wage contract to the agent, and then the agent needs to decide. The agent has two parameters or two decisions that he need to think about. So the agent decides on whether he would like to work for the principal or not. And the second is that he needs to decide what is the optimal effort that he will bring for the principal. Because the principal can anticipate these two decisions of the agent, our starting point is the agent. First, the principal needs to think about what is the agent doing. So the agent is maximizing his certainty equivalent. But you can see here, so the certainty equivalent of the agent is X star of E, which is defined as the expected wage. So everything the agent could gain is the expected wage minus the whole cost that he needs to bear. The one part of the cost, his C of E, which are the cost of effort for the agent, minus, and this is the new one in our model compared to risk neutral case, is the last, which are the cost of risk. So we can insert the wage. The wage is the fixed salary plus the variable payment, so the incentive payment. And then our certainty equivalent becomes equal to alpha plus beta E minus the cost of effort minus the cost of risk. And then we need to maximize this certainty equivalent by taking first order conditions, so having the first derivative with respect to the optimal effort E, and this is the result. And this equation gives you the incentive constraint. So better defines how much effort the agent will optimally exert. So if you would set an incentive parameter equal to zero, then the cost of effort will also be zero, and cost of effort equal to zero, meaning that the agent will not put any effort. So having a beta of zero will induce zero effort. Therefore, the agent only puts in effort if our beta, the strength of incentives, will be larger than zero. And this incentive constraint also implies that the larger our beta is, so the higher the fraction the agent will receive from the total output, then the harder he will work, because then we're having more costs of effort. So the principal anticipates the maximization problem of the agent, and he also needs to maximize his own profit. So the principal maximizing his net profit, but the principal do this maximization problem under the participation constraint and under the incentive constraint. So the participation constraint defines that the agent needs to have an incentive to work for the principal. So here you can see the participation constraint in our model. So his certainty equivalent needs to be larger or equal to his reservation wage or his reservation utility, which is his outside option. So the whole wage that the agent could earn minus his cost of effort minus his cost of risk needs to be larger or equal to his outside option. But the principal will definitely not give the agent more than he needs to do. Therefore, we're having here the equation sine. So the principal will set the wage equal to the reservation utility. So now we know that the wage that the agent will receive from the principal is equal to his cost of effort plus his cost of risk plus his outside option, his reservation utility. So now the principal maximizes his expected profit, which you can see here on the next slide, under the incentive constraint. So the incentive constraint is responsible for the optimal effort. So the principal can insert the optimal E star that we calculated for the agent, and the principal is also maximizing his profit under the participation constraint, which determines the wage. Therefore, he could also insert now the wage of the agent. So this is the expected profit, which is P of E minus the wage, reservation wage, cost of effort, and cost of risk. And now we are maximizing the expected profit with respect to the optimal effort. And the result, you can see here on the bottom of the slide, is the optimal incentive parameter B star. So the optimal B star will be first derivative of P of E divided by 1 plus coefficient of total risk aversion times the second derivative of the cost of effort times sigma squared, which is the variance. So if you are remembering the result that we have in the problem sets for the risk neutral case, there in the tutorial we discuss that our optimal beta in the risk neutral case is always equal to 1. So in the risk neutral case, we have an optimal beta of 1, which means that the agent will receive the total output and will have a payment to the principal, so our optimal alpha is always negative in the risk neutral case. And now we are seeing if we're introducing risk aversion, then beta is smaller than 1. So the implications from this is if we're having the risk averse case, then we are always dealing with a trade-off. So on the one hand, we need to have an incentive for the agent to work hard, so it is better to having a very high beta that the agent will work hard. But on the other side, in a risk-averse case, the agent does not like to have risk, so he has a disutility to be exposed to risk, and then he needs to be compensated for the taken risk. So in terms of efficient risk sharing, optimal would be a very small beta. And thinking about optimal incentives, then we need to have a very, very large beta. So the result here for beta star is something in the middle, because it is the trade-off of these two different mechanisms. So these two equations determine optimal effort and optimal strengths of incentives. So we are having here a small example. So P of E could be equal to E, and the cost of effort could be equal to 1/2 times delta times E squared. And if you would insert these parameters, then you will have an optimal beta star, which is equal to 1 divided by 1 plus R times delta times sigma squared. And this is smaller than 1. And we're having an optimal fixed salary, alpha star, which is equal to reservation wage minus 1 divided by 1 plus R times delta times sigma squared, everything in Breslau's squared, times this part, 1 minus R times delta sigma squared divided by 2 delta. So there you can see that our optimal fixed salary alpha star is positive. So comparing to the risk-neutral case that we looked at in the tutorials and the problem sets, in the risk-averse case, it is optimal to having a fixed salary which is positive, so larger than zero, because the agent receives this fixed salary from the principal because he needs to be compensated for the risk that he will have. And this is the result for the optimal effort. And if we compare this with the risk-neutral case, then we can see that the optimal effort in the risk-averse case is smaller than the optimal effort in the risk-neutral case, because we're always having this trade-off. So the effort implies our trade-off, that we need to set a smaller beta because our agent will not like to have so much risk, and therefore we need to set a smaller beta, but he still has a beta that he is hard working. He also needs to have an incentive to be hard working, and therefore his effort is smaller than in a risk neutral case, and therefore incentive payment is always inefficient if we are in the risk-averse case, because we always need to compensate the agent for taking the risk and need to set a smaller beta. From this model, we have two major implications. The first is the so-called incentive effect. And this means if we are not having incentive payment, so setting a beta equal to zero, then no one will work, or only doing the minimal detectable effort, because our incentive constraint implies if we're having a beta which is equal to zero, then we're also having cost of effort which is equal to zero. This implies we're having also optimal effort of zero. And after the introduction of incentive payment, the principal is able to having hardworking workers, and the workers working harder if they're receiving higher incentives. And for more hard-working persons, so person that having lower or smaller cost of effort, or person that are less risk-averse, having a smaller coefficient of total risk aversion, they can work even harder, because then the principal can set a different beta. So workers with lower cost of efforts and lower risk aversion provide higher effort. And the next implication from the principal agent model in total risk aversion is the so-called sorting effect. So the principal's profit depends on how he designs this contract, this wage contract, and he can decide on optimal alpha star and optimal beta star. And his profit goes down with the agent's cost of effort and the risk aversion. So the higher the cost of effort and the higher the degree of risk aversion, the larger needs to be the wage that the principal needs to offer the agent, because he needs to compensate the agent for all his cost of effort, and he also needs to compensate the agent for taking some risk. So as long as we're having free workers on the labor market who differ in their characteristics, then the principal could choose some of these workers on the labor market. And the principal can attract more hardworking workers by setting a very specific wage contract. And therefore, he could also increase his own profit. If the principal is able to attract workers with lower cost of effort and lower degree of risk aversion, then he needs to give a smaller wage, and at the end he can have a higher profit. And this is possible by setting a specific wage contract with a very high beta and a very small alpha. So then only the hard-working workers and those with a very low degree of risk aversion are attracted by the wage contract. So if the principal can set this optimal wage contract with a very small alpha and a very high beta, then he could make agents or workers self-select into his company. And the last question for today: is this linear incentive pay scheme efficient for risk-averse agents? This is what we discussed some minutes ago, but here we're having a small summary with the important key findings for today. Thinking about the efficiency, so no, the incentive payment in the risk-averse case is definitely not efficient, because efficient risk sharing, thinking about the example of our two farmers again, then all the risk should be by the person who is risk neutral, which is the principal. So the one with the lower degree of risk aversion or even high or even risk neutrality, those one who should bear the whole risk. But under incentive payment, the risk-averse agent will also have some risk because of the incentive parameter beta. But without the incentive parameter beta, he will not have an incentive to work at all. And bearing the risk is more expensive for our risk-averse agent than for our risk-neutral principal, and then he needs to pay a risk premium to compensate the agent for this taken risk. And this risk premium, so the positive fixed salary alpha, is the source of inefficiency. So under a first best solution, so in a world we have in total certainty where the principal could observe the whole effort, then he could pay the agent exactly to this effort. He could set the optimal effort, observe it, and if the agent was doing exactly this optimal effort, then we will receive the wage. And if he will not doing the optimal effort, then he will not receive the wage. But in a second best world, where we're having uncertainty and unobservability of effort, then it is not possible for the principal to set the optimal effort, and then he needs to use incentive payment. And in the risk-averse case, we are always dealing with this trade-off. So we're having a high beta that gives us an incentive for the agent to work hard, but on the other hand, a high beta induces higher risk that the agent is exposed to, and then he needs to be compensated for this risk. So the only possibilities that we now have, we could increase the efficiency by having incentive schemes with smaller noise. So we need to somehow reduce the noise, and this is only possible if we are thinking about our performance indicator. And if you're having a better measure for performance, then you can decrease the noise, and then the risk is smaller for the agent, and then the compensation is smaller, and also the inefficiency will be smaller. So in the next lecture, you will study the performance evaluations and how you could better measure performance. Thank you very much for your attention, and for those guys who will not see today in the tutorial, I would like to wish you all very happy Christmas holidays. Thank you.